As we continue our post-mortem on the recently concluded end to the scheduled legislative session in Albany, we're checking in today with Assemblymember Anna Kellis, an Ithaca Democrat, who's in her first term in office. Welcome back to the show, Assemblymember.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. Good to be here.
So from my perspective, during the legislative session, the issue where you really stood out from your 149 Assembly colleagues was your leadership in a campaign to halt cryptocurrency mining in New York. Why was this a topic you gravitated toward, and how did you become the point person in the chamber?
Well, it is a topic I actually worked on as a county legislator. I've been a passionate advocate for the environment pretty much my entire career. And when I was the chair of Planning, Energy, and Environmental Quality at the county level, there was a transition of our power plant to a data center, and there was a discussion at the time of cryptocurrency. So I became aware of it at that time. And then, of course, many of the environmental advocates here are environmental advocates in the entire Finger Lakes. And so we have been deeply connected to the environmentalists on Seneca Lake. I was a defender of Seneca Lake when there was the debate of the natural gas expansion under the lake. And this is sort of an addition among the same activists. And, you know, of course, the main reason is the Finger Lakes represent some of the last areas of fresh water on the entire planet. You know, industries like cryptocurrency mining, you know, that use a significant amount of energy, really do cause a threat to a lot of the progressive environmental goals that we've established as the state, one of the most progressive in the country. And, you know, more importantly even than that is the company Greenwich. They are the first company in the United States to buy their own power plant. And this is a natural gas fossil fuel power plant that used to run occasionally, you know, as one of the oldest power plants in upstate, so very inefficient. And it's now running 365 days of the year, pulling in about 135 million gallons of water a day. That is at temperatures from like 40 to 60 degrees. And they have a permit to dump that water back out at up to 86 degrees in the summer and 108 degrees in winter into a Class C trout stream. So this does have a significant impact on temperatures in the very, very localized area of the northern part of Seneca Lake, which we know is one of the significant factors that risk factors for harmful algal blooms, which has been taking over our Finger Lakes in upstate New York. So there are a lot of reasons why this is deeply personal and longstanding battle for the area.
You had a bill temporarily halting cryptocurrency mining so its environmental impact could be studied and it could be determined whether its energy consumption is in line with the state's greenhouse gas reduction goals. The companion version of this bill ultimately passed the Senate, but it didn't pass in the Assembly, didn't even come up for a committee vote. What was happening behind the scenes on this bill?
Yeah, so the Senate and the Assembly work very differently. In the Senate, the legislators are allowed to select priority bills, and this was a high priority bill selected by the sponsor in the Senate. So it moved very quickly. I think the day that it was introduced, it moved within 24 hours through the Senate. In the Assembly, during the last week, there was some opposition that was posed from several unions in the state concerned about the impact on jobs. Though, you know, the research shows that the amount of jobs that are created by mining facilities in particular, which is the specific focus of this moratorium, produce very few jobs. I think that we just need education and we need discussions, which will happen over the summer. This is a very new topic for a lot of people. When I first brought this topic up, when I introduced my bill, there were people, you know, from totally understanding it, understanding the environmental impact, all the way to people thinking that, you know, it was a computer game. So there's a heavy lift, and I think that there's been a lot of attention this year on it, you know, particularly given that China is fast-tracking banning it Many of the provinces and the provinces that carry it the most have recently banned it. Iran, Turkey, these have happened just in the last 2 months. And specifically because of the environmental impacts of the mining. But people really need to understand that it's not cryptocurrency that this bill would put a moratorium on. It is specifically mining, and that is specific to the form of transaction authentication that is called proof of work, not all forms of authenticating monetary transactions within currencies, such as proof of stake or proof of authority, for example. And they use minuscule amounts of energy in comparison to proof of work. Proof of work happens to be the method of authentication that is used by the largest companies like Bitcoin and Ethereum. Although Ethereum has announced that they are committed by the end of the year to transitioning to proof of stake and have stated that if they, when they do, that they will reduce their global energy consumption by 99.95%. A quite significant difference just by a different form of authenticating a transaction.
In case you're just joining us, you're listening to the Capitol Press Room, and we're talking with freshman Assemblymember Anna Kellis. In talking about your bill with WSKG, you highlighted the role Assembly staff plays in the legislative process. As a freshman lawmaker, what did you think of the power Assembly staff, especially Assembly Central staff, exerts over life at the Capitol?
Well, I think, you know, it was definitely a process every assembly member has to learn and really important. But what I appreciated, honestly, is that through the process, my bill was definitely improved. Details were included. It's a painstaking process, but also, you know, I'm a very understanding person in that way. And I also am very dedicated to process myself as an academic. I would certainly rather what I put through not only is quality legislation that does what I intend to do, but also minimizes the unintended consequences. So personally, I really understood that process, and it was just frustrating that we ran out of time. You know, there really is a short window of time from completion of the budget to the end of session. And so there's sort of a bit of a Hunger Games in the end. And I think there were 14,000 bills that were introduced this year and less than 1,000 that ultimately passed both the Assembly and the Senate.
It's interesting to hear you talk about that scrutiny that your bill got and the effort to hone it, improve it, because there's a reputation that a lot of bills might get to the floor that aren't undergoing that same sort of treatment. And it's why we have to see chapter amendments that have technical corrections. Do you feel like your bill was specifically focused on for these sort of changes and improvements, or do you feel like that's the process in general? I mean, what do you think?
I think that it is the process ideally for all bills. I think that when things get really frantic, when there's so many bills, it can get hard to focus on all of them. I think it was a combination of the way that I am and the way that central staff was really trying to be thorough. But underneath all of it, honestly, was the fact that the topic itself is so new for so many people. And so many people are playing catch up. I mean, if you look too at the federal level, scrambling to figure out, you know, what we would regulate, how we would regulate it. New York State is one of the only states that actually has regulations requiring a certification on the exchanges themselves. This is very nascent. The industry, I think, launched 2009. Bitcoin was the first company that launched. So most people consider this very niche. Right now, I think for the largest company, which is Bitcoin, there are about 1 million active users. And we have, you know, 8 billion people on the planet. So it's pretty niche. But it's rapidly increasing, and it's almost completely unregulated. The impact and the data collection, though, on the environmental impact, that is exponentially increasing, and that's what I have focused this on and why it's so specific. And the bill focuses on creating a moratorium on Bitcoin or cryptocurrency mining, Bitcoin being one of the largest ones, but cryptocurrency mining using proof-of-work authentication methodology specifically in power plants that are specifically using fossil fuels and require a full environmental impact assessment. So the intention is not for it to be permanent. The intention is we need a pause. We need a pause on an industry that is known to be phenomenally energy intensive, and evaluate the air, water, and GHG emissions impacts of this industry, particularly if it is expanding in power plants throughout the state, because there are 49 retired power plants in the state, by the way, and there is already a second power plant that has been purchased by a Canadian Bitcoin company with the intention of putting a second mining facility in that facility. So, you know, the concern is the trend. But the intention of that environmental impact assessment is to evaluate its impact on air, water, and GHG emissions in the context of our CLCPA goals and our, you know, overarching climate goals as a state.
Are you concerned at all about this leading to a slippery slope situation where if New York decides to get in the business of limiting what fossil fuel energy can be used for, in this case, cryptocurrency mining, could lawmakers or state regulators eventually tell us, you know, you can't turn the air conditioning up super high in the summer if you're relying on natural gas, and don't plan on raising the thermostat too much in the winter? Are you concerned at all about that?
I'm not. I mean, the future is, you know, in the world of climate change. I mean, right now we know 4 years from now we are estimated to be at risk of or expected to hit 1.5 degrees Celsius increase, which is the first major tipping point that will significantly increase our risk of runaway climate change. So let's, you know, put it in that context. I don't think that we have fully viscerally experienced the negative impacts on all of our lifestyles of what we are going to experience with that kind of climate change. So that aside, that is absolutely not the intention. I do not believe that this bill is in any way a slippery slope. People need to understand that this methodology is orders of magnitude more energy consumption than any technology that I have seen. So, for example, if you take all of the global energy consumption of Google, Facebook, and Amazon, the one company that is the largest company based on proof of work, which is Bitcoin, uses more energy than all three of them combined globally. Now, the argument has been, well, why are you targeting us? Because the banking industry globally uses more energy than Bitcoin, the one company. But that is disingenuous. As a scientist, it's disingenuous to look at it that way, because you have to look at it apples to apples, not apples to oranges. So you look at the usage compared to the number of actual users in that sphere. So, for example, you have, as I said, about a million active wallets at any one point in time in Bitcoin. But let's just be, very generous and say there's been about 100 million wallets or accounts that have been opened since its inception in 2009. So let's put 100,000 in the denominator. Compare that to how many individuals use the global banking industry. We're looking at like 6 billion, 7 billion. So you take the energy consumption, let's be conservative and say 250 terawatt hours is the energy consumption of the global banking industry over, 6, 7 billion? And then you compare it to 128 terawatt hours of energy consumption by one company, Bitcoin, over 100 million people. The usage of energy per capita user of the one company is orders of magnitude larger than literally the largest energy consumer, which is one of the largest energy consumers that we're looking at, which is the global banking industry entire. So it's really disingenuous to compare this to all other technologies and say that this is a slippery slope. This has been identified not only because its usage is orders of magnitude above, you know, what we have seen, but also because it's unnecessary. There are at least 15 other forms of authenticating transactions in a digital currency market. So the question we ask ourselves, there might be a culture of using proof of work, but is it necessary for digital currencies to exist and to prosper? And the fact that, you know, the second largest company that uses proof of work has committed to transition the proof of stake, I think in and of itself says a lot.
And after a quick break, we'll continue our conversation with freshman Assembly Democrat Anna Kellis. When we get back, we'll ask how the upstate-downstate divide materialized in the legislature and explore how her scientific background affected her work in Albany.
Support for the Capitol Press Room is provided by the New York State AFL-CIO, a federation of 3,000 unions fighting for working people by keeping New York State union strong. UnionStrongNY.com for more information.
You're listening to the Capitol Press Room, and we're continuing our conversation with freshman Assembly Democrat Anna Kellis about her effort to regulate the use of fossil fuels by cryptocurrency mining operations. In the final 2 weeks of the legislative session, you introduced a, I guess, less intrusive bill, which would have required the state to simply study powering cryptocurrency mining facilities with renewable energy. What prompted you to introduce this legislation?
And there was actually a full packet of legislation. That was one of them. As a legislator, I think it's important to always put your best foot forward, put together legislation that you really feel that we need, and that was the moratorium with the full environmental impact assessment. But recognizing the short time frame and the sort of the disparate understanding of this arena, cryptocurrencies, felt that it created sort of a broad sweep of options. But I was very, very clear that the moratorium is what I felt we needed. There was a third bill, actually, that is a companion bill, and I think together they are both important, which is it would require that retired power plants or power plants that were being sold to be used for a different purpose would have to relinquish their existing air and water permit, and then any new usage would require a full process, application process again for those permits. And the reason why this is so important is because in 2012, we put legislation into place, the Article 10 legislation, that requires a more comprehensive environmental impact assessment in order to get air and water permits. But the old power plants that were built prior to 2012 grandfather in. So we don't want people using sort of the grandfathered in old permits that don't do the full environmental assessment to match our, you know, current laws and standards. And that one is equally important, I think. And both of those are bills that I will continue to push.
Well, and that bill dealing with the dormant power plants made it to the floor, ultimately didn't come up for a vote. What was going on with that one at the end of the day?
That is another bill that we need to connect to unions over the summer and help them understand that, you know, in both cases, these are not major job creators. So, for example, if a cryptocurrency mining center is built in a power plant, it is built in a structure that already exists. So there's no masonry work. There's no carpentry work. There's no plumbing work that would be necessary. That's by design. That's why these buildings are being bought. There would be temporary electrical work. For example, the expansion at Greenwich is estimated to create up to 40 jobs for up to 1 year. And the permanent jobs there are a handful of jobs, like 20 jobs. And they are high-end engineering jobs that don't necessarily match the existing labor force. The other thing that's really important that we need to keep this in context. So in the Finger Lakes, we have an agritourism industry that is estimated to be worth $2.9 billion. And in the Finger Lakes, that same industry creates 60,000 jobs. So again, we really need education and outreach, you know, to get everybody on the same page when these bills come back up in January.
In the absence of the legislature adopting some of these protections that we've talked about and the governor maybe signing them into law. Do you feel like state regulators have stepped into the void to address the concerns that you have, or do you feel like they've essentially let the inmates run the asylum?
Well, it's actually a wonderful question, and I really hope that they are and that they will. I asked that exact question, or, you know, similar analogous question at the CLCPA hearing weeks ago, to the DEC commissioner, of whether or not he felt that we could reach our CLCPA climate goals, allowing for unregulated expansion of cryptocurrency mining in the state. And there was the acknowledgement of serious concern, and that he would be looking into it closely. And I hope that that will actually be the case with the Greenwich facility on Seneca Lake, which is, again, that first power plant that has cryptocurrency mining in it in New York State. They have an air permit that is coming up for renewal. And certainly the hope is that they will look very closely at the environmental impacts in the context of our environmental goals, and that they will have a public hearing so that all of the people who live in the area, the people who have businesses in the area, of which there are many, as well as scientists, will be able to weigh in on this new industry, particularly given how much scientific information has come out recently on its impact. And I'll say, you know, one thing that's also really important for people to understand. I've heard proponents say that because the energy usage is so high for this industry, that it actually can be part of a climate solution if it is matched with renewable energy, because it will increase the rate at which renewable energy is, we get a return on our investment that can then be invested into new infrastructure, renewable energy infrastructure. It's kind of like saying that you can buy your way out of debt. The energy usage, by changing our energy usage and increasing it, we have, first of all, an opportunity cost, because the renewable energy that is created is not being used to counter or to offset or to be used for our current energy demand. So that is one thing that is really important. And the other thing that's really important is that renewable energy created by solar panels and wind turbines, that is metal, that is glass. They have materials that need to be mined. That is not endlessly renewable, and that needs to be, we need to be cautious about how much new infrastructure we build and focus on maximizing the energy consumption that we can get, or the energy production that we can get from the new renewable infrastructure we have. And the one last thing I'll say that people don't talk about as much as far as the environmental impact is the fact that these companies, for example, the Greenwich facility will have up to 30,000 computers. But computers, even just the hardware itself, is obsolete within about an average of 1.5 years. There has been a massive exponential increase in e-waste because of the rate at which these companies, the mining companies, are burning through using these high-end computer processors. So the e-waste component is something that, you know, we have only begun to consider as far as its environmental impact.
When we talked in September, a few months after your primary victory, we discussed the upstate and downstate divide, and you stressed the importance of not pitting the two sides against each other. In the wake of taking office and experiencing your first term in Albany, how did you see that divide manifest itself in the Democratic majority specifically? And did you find it to be polarizing at all?
It can be, but it also can be a real point of growth. So, you know, I think that my understanding is certainly more nuanced than it was before I started. But, you know, I still see great opportunities there. There are times in which the issues that we are looking at are, we share them and we share an understanding, like all of the voting bills that we passed, voting rights bills, criminal justice reform, many of those. But, you know, the environment that the Democratic majority representatives are dealing with, or the reality that they're dealing with in upstate, is sometimes pretty fundamentally different than downstate. The politics are different. And so a lot of it is just building empathy. And I think there was this year, and maybe more so than previous years, because we had such a large shift in the number of new legislators. We had 19 new Democratic legislators. That conversation was really front and center, and I think that we were stronger for it. Very clear, very upfront, very frank conversations about the difference in challenges that we face upstate versus downstate.
Because of your ideology, though, I think it's fair to say that there's probably more you have in common with the bulk of the New York City Democratic members as opposed to the upstate Democratic members, with a few exceptions, some of the new Rochester members. I'm wondering, though, were there any times during the year where you found yourself at odds with the members down in New York City who you might be more traditionally aligned with, and found yourselves aligned with some of the maybe more conservative upstate members because of geographical issues?
Yeah, I think that that's inevitable. I think the difference is whether you take it personally and whether you make efforts to communicate why you stand where you do. I mean, if you're in legislation, if you're in politics long enough, there will be at least one disagreement that you'll have with every single one of your colleagues. There were times in which I absolutely had empathy and standing and support of upstate. For example, I have a very agrarian district. That is not something that is, a big issue in the city. And there were times in which I felt more aligned with downstate and the city because of the district that I represent. It's a very progressive district, and I've been sent with a mandate, and sometimes that mandate aligns with downstate, and sometimes that mandate aligns more with upstate, centrally. But again, ultimately, it is being true, being transparent, and not taking things personally, and being respectful of other people having differences and not necessarily agreeing with you all the time.
And I believe last year you and the speaker bonded over some dinosaur talk. And so I'm curious what kind of relationship you guys had, if any, in 2021, and whether there was any additional dino talk.
There wasn't dino talk, but I think that my colleagues often affectionately refer to me as doctor because I'm
you have a PhD.
Very passionate. Oh, I do have a PhD, but I'm also really passionate in bringing the facts and the science in. And so, I think that that is sort of an amusing thing that I bring into our conversations and I bring into my conversations with the speaker. So, I like to keep the humor in everything and also, like, do your best, work your hardest, fight for what you believe in. And at the end of the day, you have to be able to see everyone as human and come back the next day and come back to the table, keep working hard, keep fighting. I think that there's a mutual respect there for that.
Did that background in nutritional epidemiology, which we talked about last year, and you talked about the scientific process, and I'm curious whether that background was ever something that gave you headaches this year, because not everything in Albany, the way things work, always makes a lot of sense. And there are peculiarities that the way things are done. So did that cause any problems for you and make your head want to explode?
You mean angst?
Yeah.
Yes. There were some times where, there were conversations where I had to, deep breathe, count to 10, go into meditation mode. It's very hard for me when anecdotes are used as arguments for, for a particular vote or point of view, as particularly in epidemiology. We're looking on a population basis. We understand that there are outliers, but we also understand how to identify outliers, and we understand how to identify trends and, what is representative. And I try and base my decisions, my votes, my support on the evidence that I can find, the trends that I can find. So those were my points, of greatest frustration is, hearing these fantastical stories that would sometimes, I don't mean fantastical that they don't exist, but so far from you know, the norm or the trends, but they really are exceptions and being used as justification, I think was definitely difficult. It is a trial of patience, and that's not necessarily a bad thing.
Well, we've been speaking with Assemblymember Anna Kellis. She is an Ithaca Democrat and the Ellie Sadler of the Assembly for all you Jurassic Park fans. Assemblymember, thank you so much for making the time. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. My pleasure.
Support for the Capitol Press Room is provided by New York State United Teachers, a union of professionals in education, human services, and healthcare.
Join us again for Capitol Press Room, a production of WCNY Connected, Syracuse.